Tonight's episode of the 31st Lap Podcast is brought to you by DirtTrackDigest.com. If it's on dirt, it's on Dirt Track Digest.
This is the 31st Lap Podcast, recorded live in the studios of FingerLakes1.com in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now, your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon, good evening, welcome to episode number 184 of the 31st Lap Podcast. I'm Chris Marquardt. Joining me here in just a few moments is going to be the one and only Stephen Ovens. Stephen is waiting in the wings. Full show on deck tonight. We're going to get into some of the stuff going on the national level. We're going to look into some of the changing of the guards at the local tracks here, some new opportunities with engine combinations that are waiting in the wings and have been approved here since the start of the new year. I want to wish everybody a happy new year, first show of the new year for the 31st lap, in addition to a bit of an extended break as we had some travel plans that were interspersed in there, along with a couple events tied up with the Crash Course podcast, and in addition to Christmas on top of that. So it's been a little bit of a break. Happy to be back at the FingerLakes1.com studios, and now I'm going to go ahead and welcome Stephen Ovens to the show, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Oh, absolutely, man. Always good to talk to you guys and, talk about the sport we love.
Sport you love. You got a new job, starting everything out all new for yourself with Woodhull.
Yeah, we just got everything sewn up last night with Ted and Brandy White. Going to be going down to the Woodhull Raceway to work for those guys, doing some announcing and PR and some other things for those guys in 2016. Trying to figure things out as I'm sure everybody has been. teams, drivers, fans, everybody been trying to figure out just what was happening at Black Rock Speedway and kind of, what we've come to expect here the last couple of seasons. So I had an opportunity with Ted and Brandy White and, with the racing community they've got down there and all the support that they get every Saturday night. I just felt like that was a no-brainer.
Fun track over there. I know a lot of guys have ventured over to that track this year. So they enjoyed the trips with Brett Deo's show, Empire Super Sprint, making a start over there. Black Rock, all the same, now looking and having the fourth promoter change in as many seasons, potentially the third or possibly even fourth different person in as many years. Dean Ho continuing to hold the keys to the place, leasing it out to Dan Harpel, and then last year to Mike Jackson. Mike not coming back. Sounds like Mike's pretty disappointed about that turn of events, but how did things transpire from your position on the inside with Mike over there at Black Rock?
Well, as Mike told us, a couple days ago, nothing went, perfect. And I think for not only a first-year promoter, but a rookie promoter, I don't think that you can expect everything to go just as exactly as planned. But, I feel like this is a recurring theme. The more people that reach out and talk to us and thank Mike and the staff for the past season is that they were really gaining momentum toward the end of the year. Things were, really flowing the way that we thought they should. And, it's just a tough deal. I know Mike put his heart and soul and a whole lot of, out of his bank account into that operation. And, I do feel for him in that regard. On the other hand, I know that, with him and his brother and their family in dirt racing, we haven't seen the last of Mike around the dirt tracks for sure. And who knows, I might even see him quite a bit at the new track that I'm going to work for. But, I think the general consensus amongst the folks that have been voicing their opinions anyway is, just the disappointment because, you look at, things kind of had a positive momentum to it at the second half of the year, and it kind of made you look forward to see what could happen the following year. And I know one thing Mike had told me And I don't know how many other people he said this, but he really felt like 2016 would be kind of a clean slate. There was a lot of hurdles, you know, some of Mike's doing, some and quite a few not of his doing.
Right.
And, you know, just you know, I the one thing I will say is I give him credit for sticking out the entire season, because there was some things that happened that if he had just said, you know what, I guess this isn't for me, you know, maybe God's trying to tell me something here. I don't think anybody would have blamed him. But he stuck it out. He forged ahead. You know, he had a solid, and you know, Chris, BlackRock has always had that core group of people that no matter who owns the place, who promotes the place, you know, that team has really been together the last couple of years. And I believe really makes that place float like it does.
Right. It's silly to change a lot of those faces because they're already familiar with, basically as a new promoter, you just come in and say, so what was your job before? And when they explain everything that they do, you just say, okay, go ahead, keep doing that. There's no need to micromanage it because everybody does a pretty good job of what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw Dan Harpel do that, and that was particularly important in Dan's case because Dan only had 5 weeks.
Right.
Before the season started when he took over. So, you know, that formula worked for Dan, and it really worked for Mike. The crew really gelled as the season went on. And you know, it's just one of those deals, you know. I don't know what more you can say about it. You know, we'll see what happens in the future. I mean, the rumor mill is running rampant, but... you know, we just, I guess we'll wait and see what happens. And, you know, hopefully for at least the racers, you know, maybe not so much the fans. I mean, obviously the fans are important, but at least for the racers that are putting these cars together and trying to figure out, you know, am I a one night a week racer? Am I potentially a two night or am I going to run on Saturday nights when I used to run on Friday? I mean, these are the things that guys are trying to figure out, you know.
And what are they going to
pass the first of the year, and you know, now guys are really starting to dig in their cars. I just saw Casey Pavlik the other day, and he said, yeah, after the first of the year, I decided I needed to get out the shop and get to work. So, you know, even now is, you know, guys are, you know, starting to get all that work done and, you know, to not really know what's going on. You know, hopefully everybody can find out soon.
And, you know, I mean, you alluded to a good point. You know, there's a lot of guys that ran down there last year that are still sort of sitting on their hands waiting to know what they need to do to their cars or what they need to sell off and in turn use that money to buy so that they can come and race at Black Rock if they want to go that route again, because we don't know if we're going to see a main class change over there at Black Rock. I know, as you talked about, there's that main core of people that make the track happen. Well, there's that main core divisions that have been there off and on, or always, you know, over the last several years. But at the same time, that top tier division has done some fluctuation and forced some drivers into some changes, and now they could potentially have to go back to what they were running previously.
Yeah, and I think the two glaring examples at BlackRock right now are the modifieds and the IMCA modifieds.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of conversations with a modified driver out of Penyan that, you know, he really enjoyed racing two nights a week, and I think they would like to continue doing that. And you know, I think their preparation really, you know, they're obviously getting their Canandaigua car ready, but, you know, trying to figure out, you know, do we need to pull the resources together, you know, to put a second car together for Friday nights? You know, so that's an example of the mod. And then the IMCA modified, you know, that is a tricky deal there, because you've got a group that has bought and is going to promote Dunhill now in 2016. And there's a lot of drivers that to race at Black Rock on a Friday night with their IMCA would have to drive by Dunhill or drive further than they would to go to Dunhill. So that's a big toss up right now too. You know, so for those guys, it's tough. I mean, you know, at least the guys that live down in that, northern Pennsylvania area, they've got an option. But, you know, it certainly leaves any of the IMCA guys. I know a former champion in the division, Philly, all picked up an IMCA mod here in the off season, and obviously Black Rock would be a home track for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if traveling further to, like, say, an I-88, you know, would be in his team's cards or not. So for guys like that, you know, every day, you know, going through the unknown is another day that, you know, did we make a good purchase, or did we make a purchase that's now going to kind of bite us here with 2 months to go?
Right. And we're not far away from that. Have you been, you've been following it all? Any of the news about Fulton Speedway? You talked about only 2 months ago. Fulton Speedway posted that they will be airing the finale of the Dirt Car Nationals from down in Volusia at their Winter Bash. More details to come on that. Winter Bash has been scheduled for February 20th, but you'll be able to watch the finales of the Dirt Car Nationals, which is only, what, 6 weeks away? If you could believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really closing up fast, and you know, I think that's a great event there, you know, to get folks here that maybe aren't traveling to Florida, get them excited. And but yeah, it's crazy to think that 6 weeks away. I mean, you're and not only that, but you're defending series champion. You know, boy, the clock's got to be ticking pretty loud in that shop, though.
Well, yeah, Matt Shepard, we'll jump on Matt Shepard's topic here for a minute. Let's get this changed over for Matt Shepard. Matt Shepard earning one more accolade here before we put a cap on the 2015 season. Formerly named the NASCAR champion, 8 wins leading to the NASCAR title at Utica Rome Speedway. He was second in the Empire State Series standings under the NASCAR banner after his efforts at Utica Rome to Jimmy, I believe it was Jimmy Zacharias that he was chasing. Yeah, Jimmy Zacharias, and he was 19th nationally, and that's only running at one track. 8 wins, and piled up some pretty good statistics for the track championship over there. And Matt Shepard now parting ways with HBR Racing and fielding his own team, going to be going back to the Bicknell cars, which is an exciting thing, because if you thought he was good in a Troyer and you never got the chance to see him running a Bicknell, it's going to be a fun transition back that way. He can drive the wheels off of pretty much anything that you put him in. And now transitioning back to Bicknell, which Bicknell's got some stuff going on coming up in just about like 9 days, I think. They're going to be having their open house January 16th. 9 a.m. is the start time at their Canadian base up in St. Catharines. 734 wins and 51 tracks and 13 let me start that over again. 734 feature wins, 51 track titles, and 13 series championships for Bicknell Racing Products last year. And you got to imagine those numbers are going to be boosted a little bit once Matt Shepard gets back behind the wheel of one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you've never been to the Bicknell Open House, that's an event to circle on the calendar. That's always a great little deal they have up there. And they've got to be riding high, because, you know, when you bring back a guy that won 3 Super Dirt Car Series titles with your chassis, you know, that they've got to be pretty pleased with that. And you said it, Chris. I mean, if you thought he was good in a Troyer, you know, wait till we see this year, because although he's branching off into his own team, I still think that he is going to be just as tough as you know, with any of the teams that he's raced with in the past. I mean, he is that perfect example of a driver that, you know, the old saying, you could put him in a wheelbarrow and you could take it to the front. I mean, that there's no better example of that than Matt Shepard. So to see him team back up with them, CC Performance doing the engines, and I've even heard that you could see some of the similar crew, not all of the same crew, but some crew members that he's worked with in the past could be joining forces with him here coming up. And, you know, he's got a great shop that Jeff Brunell has provided those guys to work out of. And, you know, that's a great deal for him. And that should be pretty exciting to see Matt's progress this year, because I just, personally, I don't see him falling off at all.
No, I don't expect any of that drop off either. I really just don't think that he's one of those guys that you're going to see falter. I mean, he's been so hands on as it is otherwise. I think he's going to be just fine. Turning our attention to Canandaigua Speedway specifically, they've got their year-end banquet scheduled for the 26th of February at the Elks Lodge right here in Seneca Falls. The week after that, the Grarys are going to be having their preseason racing party back at the Elks Lodge on the 5th of March. Jeremy Corcoran, in command over at Canandaigua Motorsports Park, announcing that drivers that commit to running Canandaigua will receive free entry for the month of July. I thought that was a pretty cool move, and sounds like there's been a lot of solid response so far for Jeremy and the folks over there at CMP on the heels of that announcement. I mean, you want to talk about being pro driver, it's not a bad move.
No, that's a great thing, and you know, that just gives back to those drivers that support you each and every week, and I like that they've also come out and said, you know, if there was an extenuating circumstance, you know, if a guy trashes his car in week one, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. But, you know, I think back to Paul Guerri, you know, last year, first lap of his heat race, brand new Troyer, and they had problems and trashed a frame right on the first lap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was able to jump into some cars to score some points. But, you know, if a driver was in that situation and they couldn't get back to the track, I like that they're going to take those situations into consideration. You know, as long as you are a committed supporter of the track, you know, they're going to give you a free pit pass in July. You know, we talked about that. And, you know, at first it was like, well, man, there's five July dates there. That's pretty cool. But then you got to remember that the fair has their Saturday night there in July. So, but still, four pit passes back to the drivers, that's a great deal right there. And I think the reaction on social media showed just how much that meant to the drivers over there.
And also, once again, want to hit on a point in case we missed it. Fulton Speedway, the February the 20th, is their scheduled winter bash. Fulton and Brewerton doing that tandem event that will air the end of the Dirt Car Nationals. The Dirt Car Nationals concluding on the 20th of February. They start on the 9th of February. An extensive schedule. If you go check out DirtTrackDigest.com, they've got a link to it right on the front page. For those that are focused on the modifieds, running in tandem first on February 17th with the Dirt Car Late Model Swamp King Championships. That's a Wednesday night. Modifieds are on the card then on the 18th, 19th, and 20th. That's a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, running in conjunction with the World of Outlaws Late Models over there at the Volusia Speedway in Barboursville, Florida. Fulton Speedway, we're going to bridge a little bit here and get into a, touching on some of this engine palaver that's been going on, some interesting things going on with the motor combinations on the Super Dirt Car Series. Fulton Speedway and Virgin Speedway had planned last night to have an event where you had the opportunity to talk about a 604-powered modified division. They would fit somewhere in between the modifieds and in between the sportsman class, and it would be run unto themselves. Apparently not enough interest to really generate that and have that idea come to fruition. I thought it was a good idea. That's coming off the heels of the W16 engine option, which was developed by Carl Wegner and Wegner Motorsports. That is now legal for Super Dirt Series competition, and that's the that's a big change, I think. Billy Dunn ran that engine combination up at Merrittville Speedway, ran very strong up there. They tuned on it and worked all summer long, doing all sorts of different intake and carburetor combinations to try and get it to a point where that thing was competitive, and they did it, and now it has been approved for dirt car competition, the W16 engine. We heard a couple weeks ago about the 604 crate engine that Steve Pasarek was looking at getting his hands on so that he could run that in a late model as he looks to change divisions. But now we see a crate engine option for some of the modified programs. It's going to be based on the GM LS motor, which we hear a lot about in all sorts of different performance applications. So kind of neat the way that that's all shaking out. It is, let me find that. I believe it was with Randy Slack Racing, who was with Bicknell in the past at retails. I got some details right here. It's reasonably priced, as it reads here, reasonably priced option for drivers and teams who have the desire to advance up to the 358 modified division, and it fills that gap between the Sportsman 602 crate motor and the standard 358 engine. And for $10,000 to get into the 358 division, it's not too bad of an option. Again, that motor is going to be legal on the 358 tour, and at all the local tracks that, that run under the dirt car sanction.
Yeah, that's a good deal there, Chris. I think this is, you know, we saw it with the Craig Sportsman division, and now, you know, we see it with the 358 modified. That, you know, it makes you think that, you know, this is kind of, maybe this is the way we're going, you know, to try and save costs for the teams. You know, we kind of threw it around with a couple of folks down here in the Southern Tier talking about, you know, rather, you know, we thought that this is something that might migrate to the big blocks. I'd be interested to know what you thought about that.
Well, I think it'd be great to see. I mean, obviously, this is a step in the right direction. There's been talk and toying. I think it was down in New Jersey or Delaware at one point. They had a big block crate program of some sort, and the details right now. That's what happens. You start thinking about stuff when you're live and you forget some of the details. You don't realize that you need to pull that stuff up. I remember Mike and I having a conversation a couple years ago about one of those divisions doing something similar to that or trying that out, something along those lines. I don't think we're far off from it. I mean, when you see what the 604 motor's been able to do in terms of running in the late models, you see what the 602 has done, complete resurgence for the Sportsman class. It's only going to be a natural progression. And with the amount of money that they're throwing into some of these 358 modified motors, to have an option that it's like $250 shipped, you got to throw a carburetor on it, got to throw a set of headers on it, and it's $9,950 out of the box. I think the 358 division might see a little bit of a comeback. I mean, let's face it, that series has not been as strong as it has been in the past. Great racing. It's got plenty of support, but it's not the extensive season like it has been in years past.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I think that engine package, you know, if they can develop something for the big blocks, I mean, you know, you could see a resurgence in numbers. I think, you know, that's what they're hoping with the small blocks here, and I'll be interested to see how that does. I don't know if 1 year is going to be enough to really, you know, do a good comparison. It might take a 2 year process to really see what kind of difference it makes, but you do got to start somewhere.
Right. I mean, that's just it. It's going to be slow to grow. We know that. I mean, the 358 modified is not the same animal as what the Sportsman is, and it's going to be, I think, a little bit harder to pry people out of their Sportsman into the 358 division. But being that this is that proper price point, I think that's going to be an incentive. And there's options there. That's the thing, is there's options there. If you want to go run a small block, it's an option. You might not be at the front all the time. You might not be the fastest guy there. You may not have the same luck as everybody else. You might be able to run longer, but you're not going to run as fast, things like that. There's still some things to work out. But the thing is last year, Billy Dunn and that Slack team proved that motor was competitive. They got it to the point where it was competitive. It's a competitive and affordable option for the 358 modifieds. Why not give it a try?
Yeah, and the part of the release, too, that you know, you have to appreciate all the R&D that went into putting this together. I mean, to hear the number of parts and pieces that they, you know, were swapping out. Hey, let's try this next week. Let's try that. You know, trying to find that right combination. You know, it took a full season, but they got 3 wins with that motor. So, you know, I think by season's end, you know, it really proved itself. You know, it can be just as competitive. Now, I don't know about you, Chris, but if it's, you know, if you're putting that up against a built 358 and the track is locked down, hammered down, you know, I don't know, but you know, it's how often do we really see locked down, hammered down, tacky as can be, you know, around here anymore? Unless you get a big rainstorm, you don't see that a lot come feature time.
Well, that's it's funny you should talk about that right there. Is that lockdown, hammer down setup is what helped Shane Stewart pick up a win in the third round of Winter Heat out there in Arizona. I think that was at Cocopah. He ended up passing his car owner Kyle Larson on lap 25 to come away with that win. They got a shower that completely changed the complexion of the feature and made the track really fast, really tacky. But we don't see that that type of track set up around here unless you've got a situation where the rain passes through. A lot of the times we're seeing that just for the bulk of the season. Yeah, spring's a little bit of a different animal, obviously, but if we even get the race in, you know, the way that the weather's been cooperating. So, I don't think that it's something that we're going to have to worry about. But at the same time, this is the same arguments that we had a couple years ago, and typically history repeats itself. So I'd like to think that, yeah, it's going to be touch and go. There's going to be some people that argue about it, and they don't like it at first, and it's not fast enough, and they got to figure it out. But at the end of the day, once they do figure it out, we see great sportsman cars competing on a regular basis. They can hold their own, and we still see open sportsman events for those guys that have those open motors that don't run those, and we see big money crate sportsman shows that are specifically for the crate cars. So that offers a couple different options, you know, as that market continues to build, and it might not happen overnight. It's not going to be a light switch change, but I want to believe that the curve will be accelerated, since we've already seen all this happen already in terms of what we had to do when we implemented the crate program for the sportsman here. I would like to hope that it's going to happen faster as we implement that crate program for the 358s, because maybe some of those guys are going to move up. Some of this used equipment is going to get into new hands to begin with and add more cars into the sportsman division. And likewise, it's going to move more guys up into that 358 ranks because it's something that is, again, affordable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that can, you know, it can only go up, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what guys, you know, jump ship. I mean, when you talk about the fact that it's more cost-effective, I mean, to me, I guess the first team I think of is, you know, Jake Sprinker's team with Rocky Warner.
Right.
I mean, they're a former modified team that, you know, the budget for a big block modified is just astronomical. But, you know, they were able to put a formidable crate program together for the sportsmen. So, you know, if you make 358s, more affordable, I mean, that's just an example I could think of off the top of my head that, you know, if there was an opportunity to move up a notch but not, you know, not to increase that budget way over your head, you know, that's a great option for, you know, for somebody like that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to follow.
On the topic of 358 Modified success, Eric Rudolph coming away, former 358 Modified Tour champion, dominating the first ever Allentown indoor event in that was the first indoor event that was held in that arena with Lenny Salmon's Promotions hosting it. Eric swept all of the Lenny Salmon's events last year, and that was the first motorsports event that was held indoors in that arena since 1989. So it's been a couple days since they had any indoor motorsports at all, let alone having a race to begin with. And so it was cool. I mean, I was happy to hear that. It was the event was at the PPL Center. And it's the home of the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, one of the minor league hockey teams.
Yeah, sold out crowd there.
Sold out like surplus. Had to put people in side rooms and watch on closed circuit TV. Sold out. The place was packed.
Yeah, and I love to hear that. You know, kind of randomly, a coworker of mine actually went down only about 3 hours from Sayre, where we are, and they were telling me all about it. You know, I said it was a great crowd, sold out, good racing, a lot of drivers mixing it up. And, you know, Eric Rudolph just, you know, seems like doing what he does lately. You know, he's showing, proving himself just as much on the indoor stuff there with Lafflers and everything as he does on the dirt. So, I mean, what more can you say about that guy? You know, just unlimited talent there with Rudolph.
Done all right for himself, too. That indoor racing is – I've never had the chance to go check it out, but it's something that I want to do. We've got I almost forgot to ask you this. When are we going to see you in one of these Mud Bosses?
I tell you, man, I've been putting off going to watch only because I know what's going to happen if I go and watch, so –
True statement.
I don't know. It might not be too long. you know, some of my cohorts are starting to, you know, chomp at the bit about having us come up and at least check them out. But yeah, we'll see. I know that you know, it seems like every week there's more and more. I mean, I think the other night, Chris, what was it, like a J main?
There was a J. They had 39 cars. Just in case anybody's not up to speed on what we're talking about, Radio Hill Raceway in Dundee is an RC track. And there's this new division that Eric Salvas, of the Dirt Modified family up in Canada, Eric Salvas with his dad, Gaston Salvas. He works extensively with Custom Works RC, which is Tony Stewart's company, and we've had him on the show before to talk about RC cars and this new division, which I found out most about it from Bruce Ridley, is called the Mud Boss, and is based on a very affordable, you know, $280 Traxxas two-wheel drive slash, and it's out of the box with the controller, with the battery, with the stock steering servo, stock ESC, stock brushed motor. Ready to race. You got to do some work to the shocks, change some geometries in it, and you're ready to go. Put a set of foam tires on it and get a body. You're good to go. Bruce Hilton, who is a regular runner over there, run forever, he took my car down there last weekend, the first time he'd ever driven one, did a gear change on it, and he ran 51 laps in 4 minutes and made the A-main. And I think it was Randy Winters, I think was the guy's name. Also, first time he had his car out, he made the A-main. They went all the way back to the J. Gary Drum had to come from, like, the G-main, and he raced all the way up to, like, the D-main. And that's pretty impressive unto itself. And now I've almost got my third car put together, so we'll be able to, right now, those cars, since I'm not able to go down there, I've just been handing the controllers to people, say, here, go give it a try. Check it out. I got to do some shock work on it tonight to get it ready to go, but sure enough, there's going to be one more of those things down there.
Yeah, and what's, I mean, the racing aspect of it is cool, Chris, but I got to tell you, I mean, seeing some of the decal and paint schemes these guys are coming out with, I mean, whether it's, you know, a car that they've raced in the past or some, you know, something more vintage or something that we saw in the 80s, 90s. I mean, that has been, you know, for me, not being involved and kind of watching from afar, that's been cool to watch, to see all these schemes that have come out.
It's a ton of fun. We originally planned on Nick Arrieri joining us here in studio a little bit to talk about this portion of it, but he ended up getting a call that a deal had fallen together the way he wanted it to, and he had to run down to Pennsylvania to get some racing equipment, so he wasn't here to share in this leg of the conversation before we wrap up here tonight on the 31st lap. We've got two cars together now, third car coming together. Fran Hilton is jumping in. I just did a body for him, and he wanted it based on his throwback car from when he was running the modifieds back. I think the picture that he showed me was from, I think he said it was from Paradise. But it's got Lane's Yamaha on the side and everything, but there's a bunch of Matt Shepard cars. Paul Guerrieri's got a car that looks just like this year's modified. There's some talk that Steve Payne's even talking about maybe trying to get behind the controller one. Dan Pilot had a car of his own. And this all is swirling around the fact that coming up on the 24th of February, we're going to have a Battle of the Mud Bosses race down there. 200 laps the distance. Napa has got behind it to support it. Brewerton and Fulton Speedways have come on board to offer some support to it. Catskill Fabrication and Performance, he's coming up from Unadilla, New York, and he's offered some support for it. So things really gaining some momentum. Ed Brewster from GMW Motorsports Park down in Midlothian, Virginia, he's coming all the way up to run the Mud Boss for possibly the first time in February, and the class continues to grow and grow and grow and grow. I've talked a little bit with some of the folks from Craft World Action Hobbies in Jamestown, New York. Some of those guys are talking about coming over. We just had another track open in Fulton, so now that you got an option to run on Sundays, some of those guys might end up coming down. This is it's something that's turning out to be it's gaining some pretty serious momentum. We might even see 60 cars down there.
I was going to say, are they going to have to start setting up outdoors areas to work on the cars? Because, we raced some legend cars there back in the day, and I remember a little bit about what the building looks like now, but with all these cars coming in, man, it's got to be getting tight in there.
They're talking about adding some spaces for next year at Tim Haskins' King of the Hill race, the 20th anniversary event. People were coming with small utility trailers that were outdoors pit boxes. They had generators, runners running, and everything. I mean, it was like working in a race car trailer. The nice thing about the Battle of the Mud Bosses show, it's going to be on a Sunday afternoon, and it's only going to be Mud Boss cars. It's not going to have the other classes in the mix, so to say. So that's going to be that's going to help streamline the show a little bit. But all the same, it's going to be I think it's going to be a packed house. Get down there early if you want a pit spot.
Yeah, absolutely. That is cool to see how much. I mean, honestly, I don't even think Chris saying that the Mud Bosses have caught fire. I don't even know if that's an accurate description.
Right, it's done more than that. It's caught fire two or three times over now. Radio Hill is going to be busy coming up here at the end of this month on the 24th of January with their first ever RC Demolition Derby. Catskill Fab and Performance has jumped on board to help support that as well. So the same chassis that they run for the Mud Boss is going to have an aluminum body put on it, and it's a Demolition Derby style event. A lot of guys, I mean, surprising amount of guys, surprising number of drivers looking forward to that event as well, which that's kind of cool to see, because initially it looked like that Demolition Derby thing was kind of just going to be pushed out the back door, but Bill has embraced it, and we've been able to talk to a couple of the guys that are down there, and there's drivers down there now that are looking forward to it.
Good deal, man. That's great to hear.
You got to get one, though. The Mud Boss, for sure.
Well, I do know of one, you know, as folks approach the annual tax time. I do know one guy that's very, very interested in getting a car come that time, March, April. So, yeah, I can only imagine that those numbers are going to keep growing.
Hope so. Let me know when you need a wrap. I can design one for you. I'm on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think I'd have a hard time trying to pick a design. But.
Nah, no. You need a custom one. Turn 5 Podcast and Race Chaser Online.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Woodhull Speedway house car.
Yeah, there you go. big old picture of the bowl, New York's toughest bowl ring.
Why not? Sounds like a good business write-off. You could probably trade something out with your new bosses.
I was just gonna say, man, that could be a nice write-off.
Well, half hour has come and gone already. With the looks of things, I can't believe that something. Seems like the math of that doesn't make quite right a sense. Seems like we'd be closer to 40 minutes, but nonetheless, looks like we're. I think we've pretty much covered everything for the night. Is there anything else that you wanted to hit on?
No, we're as far as Woodhull stuff goes, we've got the Arnott Mall car shows coming up March 19th and 20th down here at the Arnott Mall in Big Flats. We're going to be putting out some information about that this weekend, how to register the cars and everything. And for the first time in I'm not sure how many years, I know it's been a lot, we're bringing back the pit stop competition on Saturday night.
Nice.
that's going to be pretty cool right there in center court. So looking forward to that.
That's exciting. Does anybody have to pre-register for that in terms of showing a car?
If they go to woodhullraceway.com, we just posted today the information up there on the website. We'll have a press release coming out here probably in the next day or two. We just made things official with Ted and Brandy last night, so I'm taking a day or two to try and get things organized and get things put together. woodhullracewaypr@gmail.com, they can sign up there. Or they can give us a call, or they can even contact the Facebook page. Just need, you know, the general information, driver name, car division, car number, things like that. So,
perfect. Well, man, again, I appreciate you coming on the show and hanging out for the evening. Hope everything continues to go well for you. Happy New Year. And I hope to see you down there at Radio Hill here in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I'm going to have to put it on the calendar because we're going to go down the day before and check out the Shark Fest.
Oh, cool.
For Logan Schuhart and Jacob Allen. And we'll be coming back on Sunday. So what time on the 24th there?
The 24th, everything is supposed to go live at 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock start time on the, I was giving you the wrong date, the February event for the 200 lappers, the 28th of February. The Derby, the RC Derby, is the 24th of January. Again, the 200 lap where the Mud Bosses at Radio Hill Raceway is the 28th of February. So, yeah, check it out.
Good deal. Good deal, man. I appreciate the time to talk a little bit tonight, Chris, and we'll do it again soon.
Sure will, man. Get feeling better.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you later. There goes Stephen Ovens, new PR and announcer for Woodhull Raceway. I think that is going to do it for us. We appreciate everybody coming and hanging out with us here for a little bit on the 31st lap. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you right back here again next week.